This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2022, a conservative Anabaptist ministry convention hosted by Faith Builders Educational Programs on March 24 and 25, 2022, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. Not everybody gets to speak of something probably that they love as much as I love this topic, and I could honestly speak hours, but I won't, and so therefore there's the challenge of giving you just the golden nuggets of what I've spent a lot of passion and energy for. And so I'll start off with this comment about my topic. I had titled it in my mind, I had titled it Conceived with Passion for a Purpose, and then to my chagrin I noticed that I had gotten purpose and passion mixed up in my in the name that I contributed, but I really like it. So if you get it, I like that you can flip them around, and I was thinking of being conceived with passion as in God's passion for us. So if you get mixed up like I might, it's really okay. Like, it brings out a whole different facet of that. Let me get my stuff started here. What an incredible gift to know that we are created by Him and for His pleasure. We hear a lot these days of being created for His glory, and that is not to be separated from this idea that we are created for His pleasure. It's not that you and I are just the cutest little things walking around and we bring Him pleasure. We are pleasure because we are His children and He created us to come to know Him and to be loved by Him. This is a picture of one of my friends, and if you'll just look at her face for a minute, and in her face, looking up at this adult with whom she's standing, her face shows that she is loved, and it's enough. This is a coworker of mine. She shared this picture with me. And I don't know where you're at in life, what life is going through for you. I don't know what life will become for you in the next years. But sometimes in the middle of hard times, sometimes strength means that we pray, Lord, show me, teach me what that would be like, because that's the direction I want to go. And sometimes we're in that space of grace and strength where we can say, thank you, God. I'm like that little girl there walking on that beach barefoot with her dirty feet in the sand, looking up at her granddaddy, knowing that he loves me. We ladies get to experience God's amazing grace in a very physical way. Eve, who was the ringleader of doubt and then outright sin, was granted amazing forgiveness. I don't know if you've thought about that, how we women have the physical manifestation of God's continued grace and forgiveness and His blessing. God, whose loss, His loss in a relationship, He wasn't walking daily and chatting with His people anymore. His loss is also great, but He shows His character in still giving that gift of life to women to carry that. Adam named Eve the mother of all the living. I don't know the chronology of that, but it mentions that after their fall from the garden. So Adam names Eve the mother of all the living. And that is who we are. Whether you've ever born children or whether you haven't, we are mother of the living, whether by spirit or by body or both. So my invitation to you is to sit back in the theater, in this room, to watch and listen to the story of you, if you will. I'm asking you to maybe think about it in that way, as you sit and watch God and where God was at long before you knew anything, and you have no memory of that time. You were brought into a world that has been performing many other tasks. God's been on the scene. You were ushered into it, muted. So into a busy world, into a hard world, Job gets asked these questions. Where were you, Job? Sometimes God interrupts our life to say, where were you when life is, maybe we're a little too big in our own minds, or life is a little too stressful or busy or overwhelming. Sometimes it helps to come stabilize ourselves back to God. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth and it was measured? Where were you when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Where were you? Have you commanded the morning since your days began? And he has lots of questions. Did you? Can you? Will you? Who did? In the immediate issues of life, it is sometimes easy to think my life has a bigger shape and significance than it really does. Choosing to trust God starts on a good day by being conscious of him, worshipful, grateful. Simple but powerful building tools spirit-wise. Is God good? Does his goodness have anything to do with me? Or is he good? Is his goodness related to me at all? Does he mean what he says? Sometimes in the middle of the hard times, he asks this. And when I talk to myself, I call myself little girl, because sometimes in my mind I am a little girl, and my doubt or my question, is he good, little girl? Does he mean what he says? Answer it, yes or no. It's pretty important. So we'll move on to our bodies and the wild mysteries of creation, which is where we start. Here we are, how we are made, normally functioning, and I'm just going to jump right into it. This is not news. This is not new for most of you. In the protected world where our reproductive organs are housed low, housed inside a bony framework, you can make all the connections however you want. I'm not going to make a lot of spiritual connections with a lot of this, but brought into this world. I'm just going to do some science kind of speaking here. Starting, I don't have a pointer, and I know most of you know your anatomy and physiology enough to follow on with me. Starting at the very bottom of this being, and I'm just going to talk frankly. I'm a nurse, and I assume that you're going to be okay with that. Starting at the bottom, near the bottom, we have a vagina, which is a hollow tube. It's a passageway. It's a passageway on purpose. It's protective. It's purposeful as well. This vagina, one of the things that it does is produces mucus that helps protect as a germ barrier for anything above that. And then during pregnancy, that barrier is also very important to protect the baby as well. The cervix, you'll see that at the bottom. That's that little round-shaped part. It's a donut-shaped muscle, provides a door to keep the pregnancy safe and in place. And I'm going to speak fairly idealistically. I know that's not every story, but I'm going to talk about normal function. This cervix is a round, really thick muscle. It's about the width of two fingers long before somebody's ready to deliver. So it adds strength, and it's really super strong. If you ever have testing for cancer, that is one of the places they test is that cervix, just a scraping, and that is tested for cervical cancer. Then up from there, and it's not expanded very well in this picture, you have your pear-shaped uterus. In a person that's not pregnant, that thing is about the size of a pear and is about a 2-ounce organ. That uterus will swell to full-term pregnancy. It'll be about a 2-pound organ, much bigger. When there's no pregnancy on board, about 2% of your heartbeat's blood goes to keep the uterus and the ovaries alive and keep them perfusing healthily. So we go from 2% at full term when there's a baby in there, about 17% of all the blood that goes through your heart every minute goes to that uterus. So that's what helps keep that baby perfusing, helps keep that alive and well, hopefully. Going out left and right from there, you have your fallopian tubes. Those are the size of a little skinny straw, drinking straw, about 4 to 5 inches long. They are very resilient, very tough. The inside is lined with a smooth lining with little teeny tiny hairs, cilia we call them. And their job is just to transport the egg to the uterus and then sperm from the uterus up to the egg. On both sides, and you can see it as a little white organ hanging off the side, those are the ovaries. Those are walnut size and shaped. One of their purposes is to produce estrogen. Estrogen is one of those female hormones we all know about. Helps keep us shaped like a lady. Has to do with all the female sex hormones for the most part. Those ovaries produce estrogen on an average daily basis. You know this from our cycles, as well as producing extra estrogen during fetal development, the development of the baby, and so forth. I don't know if you can see this on the slide very well, but this is part of the beauty of this is the ovaries are actually just sort of hanging on to the end of the fallopian tube, and those ovaries release an egg out sort of just out into your abdomen. And if you see the little, what looks like a little pink ruffle on the edge of the ovaries, those fimbriae or the fingers actually are what grab the egg and pull it into that tube. So part of the beauty and mystery there. Around the clock, the cycle repeats month by month. This is just a general 28-day cycle. For the beginning of your cycle starts, of course, with menstruation. That's when no sperm has been placed in there, when there's no conceptioning happening. And then for a period of time, the hormones build up, the uterus, the inner lining of the uterus builds back up, preparing itself for a rich bed of life. And then there's the period of time where the egg is released. You'll see that in the light blue, where the egg is released, called ovulation. Everything, the stage is set, if you will, for that sperm to meet with the egg. If at that point, of course, if there's no sexual intercourse during that time, that egg is discarded. Whether it's reabsorbed, we don't always know, or it passes outside the body. And then the last segment, of course, says uterine lining continues to thicken, again, hoping for life. It's like your body's doing all it can to give this life and give all the ultimate that it can to feed and to keep this pregnancy alive and well. On the top left, you'll see a picture of wavelength of the different hormones. I'm not going to really describe them, only to tell you that most of you ladies are familiar with at least hormone surges and drops, but sort of makes you feel better about some of your miseries when you see the rise and fall of those. And of course, every lady is different. Some of us will be reminded painfully, and some of us get by pretty easily with how that works. Four different hormones involved in four different stages of maturing the egg or maintaining the egg during its journey and for hoping for conception there. Again, the bottom, so I'll read this. Hormones influenced by other hormones, they starts in the brain, influencing hormones down in your ovaries, are the metronome of the cycle, ticking on approximately about every 28 days. Estrogen is what directs the maturing and release of typically one egg each month. Typically, the ovaries will take turns ovulating, but then there's some amazing things happen for people who only have one ovary or one fallopian tube. The other ovary often kicks in and takes its place, so that the metronome of the cycle of life, if you will, can keep on happening. There's some amazing things that happen all over this. I could talk about this for a very long time. It's all I can do to not go into it further. Ovulation is the releasing of the egg to be fertilized. Another hormone called progesterone prepares the uterine lining. On the picture here, you can see the dark red inside the uterus, and that's to denote that there is a super rich blood supply, an extra layer of tissue that will then be sloughed off during menstruation, a discarding if there is not impregnation of the egg. Here's a picture of an ovary. It's an extremely blown-up picture of an ovary, and the egg is being released. That little yellow bubble is the egg. Literally, this is an actual photograph of an egg being released from the follicle. The follicle is simply what houses and produces that egg. Many may experience some cramping, but most times it happens without our awareness. The uterine lining at this point, again, is thickened. Estrogen and progesterone are typically at their peak. Vaginal mucus changes. If you're a person that has questions about natural family planning, some of these things are significant for knowing when and how to think about sexual intercourse in relation to your cycle. So vaginal mucus is thin, allowing any kind of sperm movement to be at its peak. In sexual intercourse, millions of sperm are released in just a very small amount. Differing sources gave me differing amounts, but nobody said more than a teaspoon of semen from the man, and will quickly move through the uterus up into the fallopian tubes. The egg, you know, out, if you remember your picture, the egg is housed out. The egg is being released into the tube, and that is moved by small. The egg has no way of moving itself, but is moved by the small hairs in the fallopian tube, moving towards the uterus. But the sperm are able to propel themselves toward that egg, and they typically meet in the outer, if you remember, it's sort of as wings. They typically meet out closer to the ovary, about the outer one-third on an average basis. Now, the lifetime of an egg is pretty short, 12 to 24 hours after that. You remember the little droplet of gold. About 12 to 24 hours after that is released, that egg is rich and it is ready, but it does not live long. 12 to 24 hours, that egg will fade and it will die. However, sperm is a lot more viable, has longer viability, and that has up to 72 hours. Again, that kind of information is pertinent if you're working with women trying to get pregnant or not trying to get pregnant. If you're working with young teens, if you have kids club teens, and like there's all kinds of questions and that these kind of things bring up. They tend to think there's a lot of young and maybe not so learned or not so learned people that tend to think that you can't get pregnant the first time you have sex, or that if you're not pregnant within those first number of hours that you can't get pregnant. That is not true, and that's why I included those. The egg is super protected by an outer lining. Only one sperm typically will break through. That lining, the outside lining, once more gets this electrical charge thing going on to prevent further penetration of other sperm. So it's not like when one gets through, more can it. Like God does this neat thing of protecting, and typically that's how this happens. Many sources, and these are not even remotely Christian sources of information, say that when a sperm breaks through into that one egg, into that very tough protective barrier, a very short spark of light happens. So I don't know. That just delights me to death. I just sort of think that's sort of God like quietly saying, and let there be Ruby or Irene or Elaine. That's just me. But I like that, and I hope it's true because I think it's pretty powerful. Okay, so another this next slide, set of slides here, a picture again of conception happening on the top far left picture. The egg is released, conception happens, and then the little pictures as they go along from left to right are the multiplication of the cells. These cells start doubling within very short hours. The picture on the bottom right is a picture where you can see the outside of the egg is still round and smooth and looks normal. Inside there's this amazing doubling of cells just within hours, really. And so we're going from more than microscopic. It's a very microscopic kind of a miracle, and all this is happening. So here again, this is you, picture you in God's hands. And he's carefully and gently taking care of you, and he will, no matter what it is that you will go through, he will, and he does this. The miracle of life continues to be and grow, doubling in size, multiplying cells very, very quickly. God has chosen your every detail, the color of your eyes, your dimples or freckles, where your calic might be. He must have had a blast. He must still be having a blast creating millions of people with millions of options. I think I'll make her a soprano, he might muse, and wow, am I going to love her. Within a week of conception, the conception has traveled in from those tubes into the uterus and will implant into the uterine wall. The placenta forms and will be the most amazing disposable organ ever. I probably am just a strange labor and delivery nurse, but I love showing those placentas to these little mamas that deliver, because it is just like the neatest thing in the whole wide world that God has made something so humble, that does such amazing life-giving, and he did it well. And so I actually enjoy that. So I don't know what it says about me, but it's true. Around 20 days of conception, your heart began to beat. Less than 3 weeks after this started, that heart begins to beat. And only God knows you're around. You will have your own blood supply. No mixing with your mom's blood. Your blood will go to that placenta. The moms will meet it. And that's how you will be provided for. By the time you're 5 to 6 weeks old, you're the whopping size of a pea or an apple seed. Your eyes, ears, and nose are recognizable. In our modern day, most women by far now know that they are pregnant by this time, with ultrasound being what it is. It didn't used to be that way. I have to sort of change what I say anymore because things are certainly a lot more modern. At 8 weeks, the size of a lima bean, your legs are fully developed and you are easily visible by ultrasound. At 12 weeks, the toes and fingers already have the nail buds. Urine secretion in the kidneys has begun. Arms and legs are sort of twitching, moving. There's much more of a little flutter. 16 weeks, you begin to swallow amniotic fluid, and that's important that you swallow that. That's part of the maturation, the maturing process of your lungs, and also part of maintaining the fluid in the uterus. Hair formation is noticeable. Now, I don't have to, I'm just going to slide this in to make my point a little bit, but these early days are where obviously substance abuse and especially substance abuse is so detrimental when these most basic and necessary organs are developing. Makes a world of difference in what a mom has been doing or is doing. So back to my notes. At 20 weeks, that's halfway through the pregnancy. Most moms by this time feel movement. It depends on whether it's a first-time pregnancy or second, third, or fourth. But usually by this time, there is movement. And for somebody that doesn't keep track of their cycles and doesn't know when they got pregnant, sometimes that makes an easy dating method. When did you first feel the baby move? 24 weeks, there is a substance now being produced in the lungs called surfactant. Surfactant is being prepared so that when this baby takes its first breath, that the expansion of the lungs is no longer sticky and gluey. That surfactant allows it to open up and close with respirations, and so that's pretty important. By 24 weeks, the eyelids are no longer fused. They can actually open, and the baby responds to sound and light. Typically, by this time in a modern world in which we live, if this baby is born, it still has a lot of hard knocks to go through at this stage, but typically babies, they are viable at this point. They can live if you have a high-risk center and if there's not a lot of other infections or if there's not a lot of other things working against them. By 28 weeks, the lungs are much more developed. If it's a little boy, the testicles are now, instead of being trapped up in the abdomen, they descend. And then for the sake of time, I just sort of went through to the end. Down towards 37 to 40 weeks is a great time to be born. The lungs are the last thing to mature and to be ready. And, I don't know how God chose which organ to mature first. I mean, you really, really do need your lungs, but those give us a little bit more of a fit if a baby is born early than anything else, because you really just can't do a lot if this baby is born too early on for the lungs. A mysterious clock begins the labor. We don't really know what starts that, and for most women, during the process of labor, you'll be pushed and squeezed through six different moves as the baby descends. And I know this is more of a nursing picture here of different positions that the baby is in, But every time I look at this, I'm still amazed at all the tight places that this baby has to get through. And I think about that spiritually. I think of that a lot when times are tough and you don't really know what to do or where to go. I know here I am, the labor nurse, again saying this, but He knows our way and He knows our path and He can lead us through that. And we're not alone. During this time, the baby doesn't move very much. You can feel body parts moving. I feel that all the time when I check these ladies. They're positioning and they're maneuvering, trying to do what they need to do. And that's always fun and exciting to tell the moms. And I may as well tell you, I was going to tell you anyway, but I'll just tell you now. My labor rooms are usually sort of the loudest ones around. It's not terrible, but it's sort of exciting. So we enjoy it together. And everybody likes it, the patients and the doctors and other nurses. It is just God doing His thing in the most mysterious ways ever. So here I have a picture of a baby who's just been delivered, and the cord is still intact, and the baby is blood covered and slimy with amniotic fluid, and I have a story to tell you. I insist on finding a treasure hunt with God during my days when I can forget my brokenness enough to look for Him. And I see a lot of it in OB. I love it. And so I have a story about a baby Jay, I'll call her. And baby Jay was much anticipated. Parents had had some losses before. She came along at really not the easiest time in this couple's life. But when she was born, nobody knew what she was going to be, whether it's going to be a boy or a girl. And those are way so much fun labor rooms to be in, because everybody explodes into, it's a boy, it's a girl. So you sort of feel a little bit like God probably just smiles at that. He's like, yep, that was me. This father grabbed this baby right out of the doctor's hands. So the doctor caught the baby. He grabbed the baby from the doctor's hands and just brought her up to His face. So I want you to picture yourself in this spot. You may not be in a place right now where God feels close, or you may not feel like you know this God. I don't know all the scenarios that can be. Sometimes I have to pray, dear Jesus, help me to get there in my thinking. Help me to get there in my belief. Show me. And her daddy picked her up, grabbed her from the doctor's hands, and kissed that little fat baby all over her precious body. And I want to share that with you, because the love of a father and the delight that he had in her. I know it's not because we're cute and fuzzy that God loves us. He loves us because we're His children, and we're going to get to know and love Him. And He's going to get to love us like a father loves to love his children. And so I share that story with you. I'm going to talk a bit about a few more of the dark sides of sexuality. Not for everybody is this a beautiful picture. Not for everyone has this come easy. And I recognize that I deal a lot. Probably 65% or more of my patients are not married or have less than ideal circumstances. We're broken in our churches as well. We're hopefully being healed and being taught and being loved. So I want to say these things. A person's sexuality and their identity as a person are very much connected. I feel like there are things attached to, I'm going to speak honestly, of things attached with people's sexual experience, sexual activity, that are really, in a perfect sense, where there's marriage and there's a loving relationship, are probably unparalleled in receiving and giving of love. But when things are broken and when people are broken, the hurt and the identity that gets smashed or gets ruined is also big. So I wasn't sure how many young people I would have. That just has to do with questions and just the encouragement to value your purity and to hold that high. Your choice for purity is God-honoring in the highest sense, giving Him, when I say a clean mind, I don't mean like gutter versus clean. I mean a blank slate for God to fill in that story and to fill His value in your life. and to give him a protected heart for him to work with. It's not about us, and it's not about how nice we're going to have life. It's about God giving us life so that we can birth other people. We are all called to birth people. Whether you have had a life in your uterus or whether you are not, there is a biblical mandate that we are to birth and to grow other people in Jesus, and that's how I believe about that. God chooses the path that helps us to know and to love him best and to bring him pleasure as he shows himself in our life. So I had to tuck in a couple things, and one of them is this, and if you're single, this is for you. Marriage is not a reward for being pretty enough, desirable enough, or whatever enough. Anyone can get married, and that's not to diminish the beauty of marriage, the gift of marriage. It is just saying in our own carnality, we can get what we think we must have. Choose his way. Don't confuse belonging in intimacy with sex. It does not mean that there's not belonging and intimacy with godly relationships within a marriage, but we have a belonging. We have intimacy with friends. I'm deliberately separating sex out of the picture because I think for singles, it's easy to think, to maybe assume that that's the best way to belong or to be intimate, and it is one of the ways, but it does not necessarily mean it's the highest way. Plenty of people that have a marriage relationship do not have belonging and intimacy. Okay, so just making a couple notes there. If you've made poor choices, that father in that picture way back in the beginning, he loves to restore and to heal. If you've discovered comfort and pleasure through repeated pleasure of your own body, or seeing, reading someone else's body and sexual activity in books and stories, there is hope and victory beyond the shame. There really is. We have a Redeemer who can and will silence the accuser. There is, I'm going to say this from my own opinion, but there is an accusation that the devil likes to attach to sexual sin, maybe sexual perversion, sexual history, whether it's innocent or whether it was something you chose. That accuser is very noisy, and he is loud, and he does not give up, okay? He doesn't get to have the last word. It's true that God will pick you up and kiss your little perfect old body and love you, okay, no matter where you've been. Sin against our own bodies in regards to sex has a spiritual price tag unlike any other, and I think I've read this. Just as pure marriage, undefiled, in loving relationship is a worship thing, sex outside of God's will is nakedness plus rejection at a soul level. He invites us to his temple, virgins all, and I don't mean just the singles. When I say pure virgins, I'm talking about women who have given your bodies to God in chaste marriage as well. Pure and joyful, who know that he is right, that his plans are good, and that he is enough. So I say, make this world wonder what's up with you anyway. Live that joy. That's what I have. I hope you can remember back to the picture of the young little girl who looks up at her daddy, her granddaddy actually, and knows that she is loved. And if you don't take anything away, hopefully that can be yours. But are there any questions or any comments? So the question has to do with if a mom has been doing drugs and withdrawal with a baby. That answer tends to be answered a little bit in what agents that she has been taking. We're seeing lots and lots and lots of babies being born on marijuana. With marijuana getting a legal status, we're seeing a lot of that. So yes, there is a withdrawal. The big part of what makes it a little bit of a messy process is that most women that are abusing substances also will smoke, and so sometimes it's really difficult to know what is nicotine withdrawal and what is hardcore withdrawal. Some of the worst that I've seen is brand new babies, and this has happened the last couple of years, newborns who are so coming off of those drugs. The worst I've seen is a baby pulling its knees up and its legs just shivering like a tree for minutes and minutes and minutes. So a couple of things we do: give them a quiet, super supportive environment, encourage the mom to do skin to skin. These mothers feel incredible shame. And if nothing else that I've learned, it's to give these mothers grace and love. Because in their words, I knew better, I know better, but I cannot help myself. And I'm going to give you a quick story to add to that. These moms will tell, they will tell you that in the beginning stages of drug, whether they're snorting it, huffing it, injecting it, whatever it is, for whatever reason they started doing this, the initial high from drugs is something I'm told can't be described in any other with any other physical comparison. And because it's such an amazing thing, they try to chase that and mimic it, and to do drugs again and again to try to get that first high. They will never again get that first high, but they'll get close enough that they think that the next time maybe they can hit that high. By the time they catch on that they are way over their heads, it now produces an incredible physical pain unless they get high again. So, like, for me, that is a huge thing of grace, and I'm glad that I'm in nursing to understand that. Because when I look at this mama who has done such what I feels like a terrible thing to her baby, it's a whole different thing to know that it is actually when they go through withdrawals, these moms off of stuff like cocaine, crack, that level, they will just throw up incessantly for hours. They hurt physically like nothing you've ever seen in your life. If you have no other way of thinking about them, think of them in the grace and the difficulty of what they're now left doing. They can't wish it away. So that was a long answer to your question, but maybe a little clip of grace as you think of them. One of the things that helps, one of the biggest things I'm told that is helpful to these moms, most of them have broken so many chains of support, so many relationships. I've been told this many a time, that the way back to love and to knowing that life is good and worth saying no to is for us to just simply love them and to give them relationship back, because that's the one price tag. That's the one thing they have lost that's worth more than anything. And so maybe that's helpful to you. They didn't grow up wanting to do this. And it's a hard job getting off of those.
What are the effects of marijuana on the babies?
The effects of marijuana on the babies? So some of the side effects tend to be a real not wanting to gnaw, and like it's like they can't be satisfied. But marijuana is one of the more subtle, that's one of the more gentle ones, if you want the truth. So they have tummy ache, they have a stomach ache, they're constantly want to suck. But again, it's hard to separate that from the nicotine. The scary part being a labor nurse in this day and age is that almost every drug that they try on the street has something else with it, or they don't know what they're getting. So they think they're buying one thing, and it's got some unknown agent that nobody knows what is, and we don't even know, like, it's not showing up in drug screens. So a lot of these kids are coming through, and we don't know the whole picture.
Does
marijuana have long-term effects on the baby? Yeah, they all do. They all do, but the one, it seems like where the one truth of all of it is that where it tends to play the biggest price is in learning ability. Am I right? Is there anybody that would like to correct me? So when they start going to school and learning not only that, but it's learning attitudes, learning behaviors. Learning academically tends to be complicated. A lot of these kids don't grow up in a family where everything else is just ideal. Like they're sort of born into a system where there's a lot of brokenness and so that's part of the complicatedness. But yeah, there is a lot of long-term effects from it. Yes. If the mother is not on drugs, but the father is, so the question is, what happens? Is there a problem if the mother is not addicted to drugs, but the father is? So on a physical level, I don't know. Again, I'm open to any other medical people in the audience. I'm not aware of any transfer of anything genetically that way. Maybe a propensity. There's question about whether these kids are more likely to become hooked on drugs or alcohol later on in their life. There's always that question genetically that is a possibility. But we don't see that. We don't see that at all in the birthing experience and in those first couple of days. We don't see any involvement. But again, most women that do drugs are with a partner that is also doing them. So it's got its social and it's got its social factors that make a difference. Somebody else? Yes, Elaine.
If a pregnancy is unwanted, does a newborn show any evidence of loss of attachment?
If a newborn is unwanted, does it show any signs of a lack of attachment?
If the pregnancy is unwanted.
So the answer, I've got 1 minute. Let me see if I can do this. The best answer I have is it's difficult to tell in those first couple of days because babies do a lot of sleeping. One of the best things that has happened in the last years is that we have done skin to skin with that baby on the mama. The reality of it is that it's pretty easy for a mom to choose comfort and known habits rather than snuggling and cuddling with her baby. So we do all we can to foster it, but I don't see that. Now, you may have a comment to add to that. I'm open to.
I'm just curious if it shows up in the newborn.
Yeah. Later on in the first couple of months, in the next couple of months, we have seen failure to thrive in babies that will not gain weight, just don't show that spark of life. They may look and act like ideal little babies, but I do know that it shows up at that point, but at delivery and at birth, we don't see that. Okay, thank you for your attention, and I'm open to any questions you have after we dismiss.
Thank you for listening. All recordings from Reach 2022 are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. To purchase additional recordings from Reach or other Faith Builders events, visit us online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769.